Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Hennessy, thanks for joining us on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Well, Coach, you mentioned before we started that you are in the car driving to a regional development camp in Kansas City. Talk to us a little bit about the regional development camps, your role with those, and the expectations you have as you get ready for it.
I'm actually a regional director now, so I've actually been on the road about every weekend going to one. With USA Football, it's a three-step process to make it to the national team. First, you have the regional development camps, which we have 30 of them nationwide. They're open enrollment. Anybody can come try out, basically. There's everything from 6th grade to 11th grade, so it's next year's junior high and high school kids. But it's a two-day camp. We have high school and college coaches there working with these kids. And although it is a tryout and it's a pathway, from there you go to the development summer. From there you make it to the national team. But for me as a high school coach, my goal at every camp is that every kid there leaves there a better player, a better leader, a better teammate, a better person. And I think we've accomplished that. This is probably my 10th or 11th camp to work everywhere from Miami, Florida. I'm the regional director, so I had all the Texas ones, Oklahoma, Kansas, Arkansas. I'm going to be in Boston next weekend. I have not had one parent or kid not tell me it was the best camp they've been to as far as instruction, becoming a better player, and just learning the game of football and also learn how to be a good leader. So that's my deal. Is when they go back, I want their high school coach to say, I want every one of my kids going to one of those USA camps because they came back a better player, your teammate, and a person when they come back.
Coach, obviously there's a lot of camps around the country. Everybody obviously sees that as an opportunity. Certainly there's a business within it. But at the same time, you mentioned something there that's important, that everybody that you know goes away saying it's the best camp they've been to. What makes USA football camps unique?
You know, I think it's a couple things. First of all, it's the organization. Aaron Ingram has done a great job of laying out a practice schedule for us. We are organized. Everybody knows where you're going by the minute. Because you got a bunch of football coaches running it. It's not individual businessmen. It's not guys out there just, they may know a little bit about football. It's not, and I'm not knocking former NFL college guys that have never coached the game, though. We got practice schedules, and we stick to it. So it's very, very structured. It's very organized. Every kid gets tons of reps. And at the end of the day, it's not a dang combine. It's actually teaching football and seeing who can play and who can't play and helping you with your skills. So whether you make it to the next level or not, that's irregardless. It's the big thing is you become a better football player. I sit in almost my whole team. Bill Williams has been my football camp lead at every one of them. He's in the car with me right now. He's sending almost his whole team to the Oklahoma City one because we know a lot of our kids aren't going to make the team. They're not good enough to make the national team, but they're going to come back a better player for us and help us win more football games next year.
Coach, having coached the national team and been involved with that, what's that experience like? How is that special, first of all, for you as a coach?
I've coached a lot of camps, so we're back to talking about the camps. I've done tons of different camps, none like this one. This one's, like I said, more organized, more structured. I've coached a lot of all-star games. Coaching the national team is nothing like coaching an all-star game. It's, first of all, the caliber of kids you get is good, but it's not just their athletic ability. It's the quality of kid that you get. They're just great kids that are there and good people. And when you're standing on those sidelines, I'm going to tell you right now, I never served in the military. Bill did. He was a Marine. But standing on the sidelines with wearing the USA, when they play that Star Spangled, I'm getting chills right now just thinking about it. Whether it was when we were in China and I was the defense coordinator for the world team, or whether it was in the North American Championship this past year where I was the head coach of the U18 team, wearing those stars and stripes and playing against another country, you're actually representing something bigger than your town, something bigger than your state. You're representing the whole United States. And that's something that you can't duplicate in any other All-Star game.
Coach, I think, I've had the experience of coaching a state All-Star game, never had anything like that opportunity, but I think the one thing that an All-Star brings out in you as a coach is that you have to bring a group of guys together pretty quickly, and you have to really be efficient as a teacher. Talk to me a little bit about, stepping into that role. Obviously, you have a group of guys who want to play for their country and have some, they're like-minded in that way. But how do you build that culture in an all-star team so quickly?
And it's probably even more of a challenge being on the USA team, because now you're talking about kids that are from everywhere, from California to New Jersey to Texas to Ohio. I mean, you span the whole United States. It's not just coaching local kids or kids from your state where everybody's kind of got a similar background, a similar culture. You got all kinds of different cultures, all type of different personalities. You know, and that's something that I saw when we went to China, that it was kind of my first experience with the being that long-term event and trying to win. And the U18 team had never won. We were 0-6 against Canada. So I did something with our staff, but our staff started talking way before, and they reached out to the kids, and they started a group. Once we found out who our team was, we all started a group within our positions. It made such a difference, because what you're talking about is huge. Of just the kids getting to know each other, and you don't waste the first 2 days trying to get to know each other. By the time you got to camp, everybody thought they already knew each other. They just putting faces with the names. They've been talking on Twitter all week. They've been emailing back and forth. They've been sending messages for months leading up to the game. So the personalities were already meshed. Plus, we'd already said, and I think you've got to be fairly simple in your system. Yeah, you can't be so simple that you get beat, you know, because you're too simple. And you got to find a way to be simple in your terminology, very structured in your practice and all your install. So your kids aren't thinking on when you finally get to the game, because basically we had about 4 days of practice and then we played. China was even tougher, because even though we had a week of training camp, when we got over there, you played, and then you played again every 3 days against a different team and a different opponent. And so that was a really tough deal. Plus being in China, tough experience in itself.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Coach, you know, taking that involvement in these camps, obviously you're getting extra opportunities now as a coach, right? And we always talk about our players getting extra reps and how getting into maybe like the playoffs, you know, allows your team to grow further than a team who didn't make it. But now as a coach, you're getting extra reps by working these camps, coaching in these games. How does that make you a better coach in the long run?
You hit it right on the head. That is the greatest thing about this. It's not only am I getting extra reps at being a coach, I'm getting around some of the best coaches in America. And I'm learning every camp I go to. There hadn't been one camp I go to that I don't pick up a new drill, that I don't pick up a new technique, that I don't pick up a new philosophy or a new quote or a saying or something that I take back home and I use the next week to make my team a better team. I had the same talk with my team yesterday. We're talking about if you're not getting better every day, you're getting worse. And that goes for every player on the team. That goes for me as a coach. That goes for my administrators. That goes for my parents. That goes for my booster club. If you're not getting better every day, there's no such thing as staying the same anymore. Because if you're staying the same, somebody out there that's trying to beat you is getting better, and you just got worse. So you've got to be improving every day. And that's the great thing about getting to be around all these great coaches and why my school loves – they don't mind me missing some school here and there, because they know that I'm getting better every time I go out. And I'm, in turn, going to make our program better.
Coach, not everybody obviously gets the opportunity to be a part of the national teams. Obviously, that's an honor, you know, that a select group of coaches get. But there is the ability to get involved a lot with USA football and get those opportunities throughout the year to become a better coach. What are some things coaches can do out there, our listeners can do, to get involved in USA football? What different things do we have that you would recommend to them?
You know, first of all, there is our RDCs. They could go coach that stuff. But whether you're youth coach, middle school, high school coach, you can get certified in our heads up training. And, you know, I'm a master trainer now also. And I haven't even done a player safety clinic yet because I've been gone every weekend doing regional development camps. But what I've learned just from that, I've taken to my program. And our new tackling system is second to none. You know, I'm old school. And I've been coaching 25 years. And I'm a defensive guy. And it took me a while to buy into this. I'm not putting my head across and, you know, sticking my face in there. And I've always said keep my head up, but it took me a while to buy into it. The near shoulder, near thigh, all those, the system, the shoulder tackling system that we're teaching now, which some people still call it the hot tackling. We've gone in with the Seahawks, with the NFL, with the USA rugby team to try to find the most effective tackling system that is safer. Because at the end of the day, I mean, we all know our sport's under attack. And do I really think it's more dangerous now than ever? No, I think it's safer now than ever. I just think we're more aware of a lot of things. But this shoulder tackling system with an emphasis on leverage that we're using now, I've bought into it two reasons. One, yeah, it's going to make me happier because it is a much safer way to tackle. But me as a defensive football coach, I'm happier because it gets them to the ground quicker. and it's a more effective way of tackling. It's made all of our kids more aggressive. We tackle every day now. We use the USA shoulder tackling system. That's how we start practice every day. We have three stations, and we start practice, whether we're offense, defense, whatever we're starting with that day, we start practice with it every day. So you can go get certified and go to one of the player safety clinics, become a heads-up certified, and that in itself will make you a much better coach. And there's also online with USA Football, there's all the clinics. You know, I've got a couple of them on there. I know Bill's got some. All the coaches that were at the national convention, we're all doing clinics. They got guys, these podcasts that you're doing right now. USA Football is doing so much to try to develop the coach. If the coach will just put in the time and want to get better, he can become a better coach.
Absolutely. It is about putting the time in and finding some great resources. And obviously, we've done that at USA Football. And I think the thing I want to mention about the new shoulder tackling system, which, again, a lot of people knew formerly as the Hawk tackling, but the shoulder tackling system is free to all coaches. All you need to do is go to our website and sign up for it. There's 22 drills, everything you need really to make that transition to a safer and more effective, as you mentioned, type of tackling.
We always had a heads-up tackling system, and at our RDCs, our regional development camp, we do that, and it's good. I mean, the terminology was good. There was nothing bad about it. It just, I don't know how realistic it all was. And the other directors, and we put together a circuit that we use at every regional development camp, so they're actually going to tackle, and we don't care what position you play. If you're a quarterback, you're never going to throw a pick, you better learn how to tackle too. So we make every kid in camp do it. And again, they can take that back. Not only can they become better tacklers, we tell them, take it back and teach your teammates. Take it back and teach your coaches. And like you said, the coaches can get online and check all that out. There's so many directions you can go with it. But it's just such a, not only a safer way to tackle, but to me, it just makes so much more sense and so much more and more effective than the way we used to do it.
Well, Coach, let's put the focus a little bit more on your program back home and some of the things you've done there. First of all, tell us a little bit about your program and how long you've been there.
I've been there 5 years now. It's a 3A school. It's my first experience at a smaller school. I've always been at a 6A school. I was at Jinx. I was at Muskogee. I was in Kansas and Texas. Then I took this job, and I wasn't really willing to change anything. I wasn't willing to coach any different than I coach at 6A. And we still run it now. I brought my offensive coordinator, David Blevins, with me. He's my 6A coach. So basically, he's been with me since we started Muskogee program. So we've been together for a long time, and so we were able to come in. It's a little scary. People ask me why we took it. They've won 2 ball games in 4 years, not for a very good program. First year we went 5-5. I think they were ready to make us mayor, and we went 3 seasons without losing a regular season game and have had a lot of success there. But I think it's more of just changing the culture at a small school. You change the culture, make the kids believe in it, and, you know, get those things done. You know, our deal, when we first got there, we said, what's going to be our primary focus as far as, you know, changing the culture? And we just said, first of all, we've got tough kids here, so let's develop tough kids. We're going to be tough. We're going to be disciplined. And then we're going to be in shape, and we're going to outshape everybody. And we took those things and started from there. You know, we were effective with it. When I interviewed, everybody wants to say, well, okay, what offense you run? What defense you run? I think any coach that goes into an interview and pulls out a playbook and says, here's what offense I'm going to run, here's what defense, I would never hire that coach. I think that's ridiculous. There's no way for me to know what we're going to run until I meet the kids. I'm a big believer in what can the kids do. I don't care what they can't do. We don't use that C word in our program. And so what they're not able to do very well, I'm going to go away from that. I'm going to emphasize what they can do well. And so if we got a bunch of big old fullbacks and we got a huge line, we're going to hand it off. We're going to pound you and run it down your throat. If we got a quarterback that can sling it all over the yard and we need to spread you out, so we'll spread you out. You know, we've got a few absolutes that we will not veer from. And offensively, we're going to be no huddle. We're going to go fast because we do think that's the one thing we can control is our shape. And we're going to outshape you. So whether we're in the wing tee, the wishbone, the dead tee, spread, whatever we're in, we're still going to be no huddle. And we're going to go tempo with you just because we can control our shape. Defensively, we're always going to be aggressive because I believe that no matter what, we start teaching man coverage day one because the guys that say, you know, we don't have athletes do that, we don't have this. My deal is this. If you're a zone coverage guy, when he gets in your zone, what are you going to do? You just going to let him run by you or are you going to man him up? You still better man him up when they get into your zone. So we play zone, but we start teaching man day one. And for the people that say they don't have great athletes, we don't either right now. But my deal is, so what are you going to do, sit back and play rush three, rush four, and let give them longer to throw? I mean, we're never going to do that. So we're always going to be very aggressive on defense and teach man day one. And then special teams, I'm a little different on special teams. We're very, very aggressive on special teams. I haven't kicked an extra point in 10 years. I don't believe in extra points. You know, I believe that if the referee every time gives me a choice, you want one or you want two, I'm always going to say two. And so, you know, the last 10 years, we're at 78% on two-point conversions. So we're doubling up because we're all about creating more possessions. Very rarely will I punt. I will punt. I'm not the never-ever punt guy. But if you put your punt return team in there, I'm going to go for it. I don't care what the down and distance is. I don't care how many yards we need. I don't care where we're at on the field. I figure if you put two guys back deep, that means I've only got to get a first down against nine guys, so I ought to be able to get it. And we do a lot of swing and gate stuff, some unconventional formations that we do that stuff out of. And then same thing with kickoffs. I mean, we're going to onside kick as much as we need to because we're all about trying to create extra possessions with our special teams. So we had some things that we would not change about us, and then we had some things we knew we had to do there, and we stuck to our guns, I think, and that was the big thing as far as creating the attitude and the atmosphere where the kids believed they could do it, and eventually we got it done.
Now, Coach, a couple things that you mentioned. First of all, your process for figuring out what your guys can do. You know, obviously the easiest thing is to say, hey, these are the kind of body types we have, but what other things are you doing initially when you take over a program to say, hey, you know, this is the kind of team that we have? Or, you know, even in a situation where you're somewhere at with a national team saying, all right, these are the guys we have, but we got to put them through some drills. So how do you flesh out exactly what that team's going to be from, a playbook and schematic perspective?
You know, and I think a big part of that, Keith, is you got to, first of all, you've got to have a system that is so multiple and flexible that you can do, because it may change year to year.
Right.
You know, so our terminology, the way we move our H-back, we basically have a pro and a twins formation, but then from there, we can number the H-back, we can move, we can get into any formation we need to get into just by changing the numbers in our terminology. And so that's something we come up with so we can be in whatever formation we need to. Because at the end of the day, plays are plays in football. I mean, you're going to run power, you're going to run counter, you're going to run sweep. You know, whether it's out of the weak tee and it's a buck sweep or whatever, you know, and same thing in the passing game. So that, and same with our defense. You know, we're very flexible in our terminology. If you first looked at our playbook, you'd think, oh, my gosh, they run a lot of stuff. But then once we explained it to you back, oh, my gosh, this is simple. So I think we've got a playbook that's very flexible. And then once you get into it, you'll figure out what your players do. Now, the national team, we watch film coming in. So we had a good idea what these kids did well, which quarterback did what, you know, which linebackers need to be inside, which ones are blitzers, which one could cover, that those different things. Same thing with your team when you go take over a new program. You start off with your basics, and you're going to know. Now, I will not take it. If I'm not in place March 1st at that school, I will not go to that school. I will not take a job if they don't hire me by March 1st, unless they just don't even care about the first season. If the first season gets to be all trial and error and they don't care how many games you win and the first season is just a freebie, then okay. Because I've got a penchant for taking over bad programs, and so does Bill Williams. He's the same way. We both got to go take over programs that are bad. We like the challenge of that a lot more than going taking over a powerhouse and just doing what they've been doing. So I think, you know, if you get in there in March with your off season, because people ask me all the time, how'd you turn Locust Grove around so fast? And it's two words, summer pride. Our summer pride program is how we did it. We have a 90% attendance rule. If you don't attend 90%, you don't suit up on Friday night, period. And there's no, I don't care that your family went on vacation. I don't care that you did, because I'll send you the schedule in January. And you know what the schedule around our summer pride. We have 6 weeks of summer pride, and you got to be there. I think that commitment, the kids buying in, probably shouldn't say this, you know, on the podcast because one of the kids might be listening, but I don't really know if we're in better shape or bigger, stronger, faster than anybody else or doing anything any harder than anybody else, but our kids think we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is the mental part, they think they've outworked everybody. So they buy in, and the more you sweat in practice, the more less you'll bleed in the game. That's a true statement because the kids buy in and they just think they've earned it more. So that's the big part of it right there. And you'll figure it out as you go. And you may have to adjust as you go. You may lose your quarterback in the middle of the season and have to adjust what offense you're in. And if you can't do that, if you're so stuck in what you do or you only know one way to skin the cat, then I don't think you're going to be very successful.
No, and that is the advantage of having a system that can accommodate not just those year-to-year changes, but sometimes, like you said, the week-to-week changes, that your flexibility and terminology and what you do to accommodate maybe a different type of player almost immediately, maybe it happens, you know, you got to make that change in a game, really goes down to the system that you set up and the terminology.
I was just going to say, in high school football, you don't get to recruit your kids.
No.
It's not like college where you're going to go recruit and to your package. You better be able to fit your package around your kids.
Definitely. The other thing you mentioned, Coach, is playing man defense and man coverage. And, you know, just before our podcast, I was talking to a receivers coach, and he talked about having very average speed with his receivers, yet they're still going to do things to try to get over the top on defenses. So it's not necessarily all about track speed. It's not all straight ahead speed, that there's still a lot of technique to this. So how do you teach that to your players to have the kind of technique that you need to still be able to win in man coverage, regardless of if you're the fastest guy on the field?
I think it all is in technique. I did a clinic last night for a coaching staff, and we talked to them about, they were real leery about going to man coverage. So as we started talking about that, there's more than one way to play man. Cedric Whitaker is one of our DB coaches that I've learned a ton from doing these dev games, or the RDCs. And Fed teaches a off man. And I tried to teach it about 2 years ago, and somebody was calling it catch man. And I never liked that terminology. I don't like the terminology soft man. He calls it off man. Now, that made a lot more sense to me. You're going to play off. You're going to play off 4 to 6 yards. You're going to move inside. And you would think that's better for the lesser athlete. But I was telling the staff that I was clinicking last night, my lesser athlete would rather get right up on you and try to get hands on you immediately. And we try to be as physical as we can. And we may get beat deep some, but the hardest pass, if you're talking about high school football, the hardest pass to throw is the fade. That's the one that most quarterbacks can't complete. It's got to be a perfect ball. You know, and we tell our kids, if you get beat off the line, which it may happen sometimes, and they're going to be faster than you, just run and catch up. Don't worry about looking for the ball. We don't talk about interceptions a lot. We talk about making them be incompletions. So we're not going to give you the slant. We're going to take away their slant by our alignment, because that's the easiest pass for high school coach for quarterbacks to complete. And we're going to make them try to beat us deep. And if they can complete that, it happens. I tell them, have a short memory. The stress that I'm going to put corners under, you better have a short memory, because it's going to happen. But also, we're bringing pressure from so many different places. You know, I love listening to offensive coaches speak at clinics, because they all talk about, man, we love when guys blitz. We love when they blitz, because now we're getting man coverage. Here's the route. And it looks great on the chalkboard. But they're not asking that quarterback back there taking a helmet in the chin every play, because everybody's bringing the heat from so many different places. They're not asking their offensive line coach that's having to pick up all these different blitzes. They're just back there as the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator. Yeah, they love it, because it's a lot easier, and you can hit a home run ball every now and then. But for the most part, you know, it puts a lot more pressure on the offense. We try to snap the ball every 8 seconds. I mean, we are fast, fast. We average, you know, 90 to 100 plays a game in high school football. That's a lot. And so, luckily for our program, I'm the defensive coordinator also as the head coach. So, I mean, if I was the defensive coordinator and not the head coach, I'd probably hate this job, because we give up some points because we run so many plays. So we look at more at points per possession and how many takeaways can we get. You know, that's really helped us too. But the man coverage, I go back to the guys that say they don't want to run it. What do you do when they get in the zone? If you're running cover 4 and a guy runs a fade on you, when he gets to you finally, what are you going to do? Just let him run by you? You're going to have to flip your hips, stick your hand in him, and flip and run man, because basically you're playing man at that point anyway.
Coach, what are some of the drills you implement to teach that? Obviously, you're going to have to teach that every single day. So what's some of your everyday stuff that you use?
First thing we do is a very, very simple drill. You're on your knees, and all it is you're looking at his hips, and when he turns his shoulders, you're jamming with that hand, okay? So we're always cross-jamming, because I think a big mistake guys make when they try to play man is that, say I'm the right corner, and he goes to run a fade on me, I'm going to try to jam him with my right hand, because that makes sense, because you're going to try to stop him. Well, you're not going to stop him. All that does is lock your hips and they run on by you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the right corner and he's going to run a fade outside me, you're going to jam with your left hand. So that flips your hips. Still try to knock him off his route, because we're going to try to be as physical as we can. Try to knock him off his route, flip your hips and run. So we'll start off on our knees doing that, and they're just turning their hips and shoulders, the offensive guy, and they're working on jamming with the proper hand. And we do it standing up. Then we get 10 yards apart, and they run at you and flip their hips, and you jam with them. And training, it's huge to train the hands and the eyes with DBs, because you got to train their eyes to stare at their hips, because every receiver coach talking about giving them a head fake at the top of the route, turning their shoulders, giving them a little shoulder action, trying to get this DB to put his hips the wrong way. Well, you can't do any of that stuff with your hips. So if they'll stare at their belt buckle, you don't ever get faked out. But it takes a while, and it takes a million reps to get a kid not to look at the upper part of the body and get him to look at his belt buckle. So that right there is huge. And then just teaching them to run, whether they're in phase or out of phase. We talk in phase and out of phase a lot, basically meaning this. If I'm in phase, meaning I can touch you. So I'm running with you shoulder to shoulder. I can touch you. I can feel you. And my hand, we try to have our hand down on the thigh. That way we're not up on the chest or get called for interference every time. But down to the hip or the thigh, now you can look back and look for the ball. If I can't touch him, we forget all about the quarterback, and we turn and we chase that receiver. And we try to find it. And something we've started doing different is, as we reach, you know, we say as their hands go up, well, I used to always say as their hand goes up, go for that near wrist. Not pull that near wrist down. Well, the problem nowadays is all these offensive guys are teaching these one-handed catches, these Odell Beckham catches, you know, with one hand. So what we start teaching now is go for the far wrist. As their hands go up, go for the far wrist. What I've seen it do for us is, one, if I pull the far wrist down, there's no way you're going to catch the ball at all. So really I'm getting both hands down. But two, it makes our kids try to accelerate one more step and reach. And a lot of times we just get that near arm, but at least we're getting an arm and we're not missing at all. So little drills like that, and working every day of teaching, working the hands and the eyes, I think, you know, and crazy thing is I'm not talking a lot about feet. And we got kids that aren't the fastest kid playing corner and probably shouldn't even be able to play corner. And most guys wouldn't, you know, they're not going to go to the University of Oklahoma and be able to play corner because they run a 4.9.
Mm-hmm.
But they can still play corner for us. And in high school, if you know, if you got good technique and you'll be physical and you'll make sure if you're not in phase, you go catch up and get in phase.
Coach, I appreciate you sharing those techniques. Got a couple more questions for you here. We obviously at USA Football are working on, you know, the pathway for the player, you know, development from flag football all the way up through high school. What are your thoughts on, you know, when a player should start progressing to playing tackle? What's age appropriate for the different levels? You know, we've obviously created the rookie tackle or the modified game now kind of as a bridge between that flag and tackle. But in your opinion, you know, as you look at especially your feeder programs, what's the pathway you think needs to develop moving forward in the future?
You know, I think it's totally dependent on the kid. And here's why I say that. In order to coach in our youth program, you've got to come to my clinic at the start of the season. And the first thing I tell them is you've got two jobs. First job and the most important job is teaching the love of the game. I want your kids having a great time, and I want them having fun and loving football. And the second thing is teach some fundamentals along the way. Other than that, I could care less about anything else. I don't care what offense you're on. I don't care what defense you're on. I don't care how many games you win. I don't care what the score of your game is. I just want to make sure these kids are having fun, because every coach wants to see that superstar at high school and say, oh, yeah, I coached him in fourth grade. You know, I was his coach. That's why he's so good. And I asked him all. I said, how many of you guys are willing to sit there and watch the big 6'4", 220-pound tuba player say, oh, yeah, the reason he's in the band is because I ran him off when he was in fourth grade because I was such a jerk that he doesn't play football anymore, and I'm the reason. You guys won't admit that. So my big deal is it depends on the kid. Football's not made for everybody. I get it. It's not a sport. It's a tough sport. So, and there's all different things for kids to do. That's why we've got – and I think it's huge that kids do get involved in activities in school, whether it's football, whether it's band, whether it's basketball, whether it's ag, whatever it is, get involved in something. But as far as when you start, that's up to the kids. I don't think there's a – the kid's crying every day during every drill because he doesn't want to go to practice. He probably doesn't need to be playing yet. He needs to wait a year or two. And I think that's something parents and coaches, you know, you see these, we call it daddy ball down at that age, you know, and it drives me crazy because I think sometimes it runs more kids off than it helps kids.
Coach, the last question I have for you, it's evident you put a lot of detail. There's a lot of things that go into building your program, but, whittling it down to the one thing that gives you the winning edge, what would you say that one thing is?
Ours is attitude. I mean, our kids think they're really good players. They think they're really tough guys. you know, if we went out and they went and tried to play for somebody else, I think they'd realize they're probably not as good as they think they are. But when I first came to Locust Grove, you know, we're the Pirates, and we have skulls all over everything, and we changed to black uniforms and black helmets and did all these things to make our kids really think they're tough. Nobody had a run out, you know, a tunnel that they ran out of basically in 3A. And I went to my superintendent and said, hey, I'm gonna buy a tunnel to run out of. We had one of those in 6A. And as well, he goes, I said, look, I got somebody to pay for it. Don't worry about that. He's like, okay, you can get one. I came to him a week later and said, here it is. Here's what we're buying. And it's a big skull head with, like, the tunnel looks like ribs. It's crazy looking. It's mean looking. And he's like, do you realize that we've won 2 ball games in 4 years and you're going to go blow this up and run out of it? I said, here's the deal. We're going to make our kids think they're awesome and make them think they're tough and make them think they're bad until they really are. And, you know, I think the mental approach of it is the thing that we do probably that. And our, like I said, our summer pride program, just the building the toughness and the being in shape, or at least making them think they're in better shape than everybody else. But I think it all goes back to their mental toughness. And then we have a good time. I mean, we're a high energy team. I'm a high energy guy, and that's the way we do it. So we're going to be very structured. Kids know what to expect every day. I think if you don't have those absolutes, you know, be tough, be disciplined, be structured, and be energetic. If you don't have those things in your program, at least that's what we build ours around. If those kids can't fit into that mold in our program, we've had a lot of kids that can't fit into that program. Not a lot. We've had some kids that can't fit into that mold, and they have to go do something else in our program. Those are the things we're not going to bend on.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate you taking time here and all you do for USA Football. How can our listeners connect with you?
My email is coachhennessy@gmail. Spell my last name, H-E-N-N-E-S-Y, or my Twitter is @MattHennessy, M-A-T-T-H-E-N-N-E-S-Y, on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way.
Coach, again, thanks for taking time to be on the podcast. Thanks for all you do with USA Football. Have a good time at the RDC this weekend, and we'll stay in touch with you. Good luck to the Pirates in 2017.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate all you're doing.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.